All right, good afternoon, or good, actually straight up noon, everybody. Thanks for your prompt appearance. As I was commenting just before we started, we have four important agenda items today. We'll take all the time that is necessary, but I would not be surprised if we adjourn much sooner than 1:30. But again, we'll take what we need to. So you all know the rules. For what it's worth, we had our first in-person council meeting on Friday, and everybody was not glad to see each other. I'm sorry we're not back in person yet, but we'll get there. We also gain some efficiencies by doing it this way. So with that, let's move right to business. We have quite a few minutes. Oh, I guess we better take roll first, huh?
Ah, there we go. Thanks,
sorry.
Judge. Judge Conklin?
I'm present, I think, yes.
Ms. Fleming? Running a little late, she should be on soon. Judge Buckley? Judge Fannin?
Here.
Thank you. Judge Gabe?
Here.
Judge Kelly?
Here.
Judge Larsh? Judge Ryan?
Present.
You know, Judge Sachs? Judge Siebert? Judge Thompson?
Here.
Judge Zahner?
I'm here.
Ms. Bartleson will be absent today. Mr. Finke?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Harrigan? Mr. Kim?
Here.
Mr. Landry by phone?
I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Levere?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Riley?
Here.
And Mr. Rule? Is running late today. Mr. Taniguchi?
Here.
Mr. Taylor?
Here.
Mr. Yamasaki?
Good afternoon. I'm here. Judge Larsh should be joining us in a little bit.
Oh, thank you. Let me just make a quick note. And advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw?
Yes, good afternoon, everybody.
Thank you. And Ms. Moeller?
Here.
All right, thank you.
This is Judge Buckley. I've joined.
Thank you, Judge.
All right. We've got a few that are trailing behind, which is understandable considering how busy everybody is. But we've got a quorum, so we can start our business, which we'll begin with where I was about to jump to a few minutes ago, and that's the minutes. So we have actually 3 minutes that we're moving for approval on. I'll consider all those in the same motion. But it's minutes of the January 13th TICBAC virtual meeting, and then the 27th and the 10th were actions by email, but those were official meetings, so we need to approve them all. Again, I'll consider a motion to approve all three together.
Move approval. This is Judge Ryan.
Thank you.
Second, Judge Kelly.
Moved and seconded that all the minutes noted the 13th and then the 27th and 10th of February be approved. Any opposition to that motion? Hearing no opposition, all the minutes are approved. Thanks, folks. Next, public comment. I communicated with Brandy just a few hours ago. I want to make sure it hasn't changed, but Brandy, no, obviously no oral, but no written public comments were received.
Correct.
Great. Thank you so much. That concludes public comment. So we'll get right to our discussion items. There are four of these items. The first, and each are presented by presenters. So luckily you won't be hearing much from me today, but these are all important topics for us to consider. The first is the minimum operating and emergency reserve policy. Begins at page 9 of your materials. Our presenter today is Joseph Glavin. And as a brief summary, this is consideration of options related to the suspension of the minimum operating, sorry, I'm just come back from reading jury instructions, so I'm transitioning, folks. Minimum operating and emergency fund balance policy. And Joe, if you're ready to go, we'll turn to you.
Excuse me, I am. Thank you, Judge. Hello, everyone. My name is Joe Glavin, budget analyst and budget services, presenting on the, excuse me, on the minimum operating and emergency fund balance requirement from within the fund balance policy. This requirement, which directs courts to maintain an emergency fund balance of 5% of the first $10 million in expenditures, scaling down to 3% of expenditures over $50 million, has been suspended by the Judicial Council in two-year increments since 2012 in response to changes in statute affecting courts' fund balances, including establishment of the 2% state-level reserve in 2012-13 and an imposed 1% cap on court fund balances effective June 30, 2014. In July 2016, the 2% state-level reserve was replaced with the new $10 million state-level reserve in the trial court trust fund to provide emergency funding, and in 2019, Government Code Section 77203 was amended to increase the percentage of unexpended funds from 1% to 3% of the court's operating budget from the prior fiscal year. The most recent action taken by this committee in 2020 suspended the minimum operating and emergency fund balance policy requirement through June 30th, 2022, while advocacy efforts continue with the administration. During preparation of budget change proposals for 23-24, the trial courts have shared that a further increase to the cap above 3% continues to be a priority to support trial court operations. Today, the committee is asked to consider extending the suspension of the minimum operating and emergency fund balance policy for an additional two fiscal years until June 30, 2024, or earlier if Government Code 77203 is amended. And this is for consideration by the Budget Committee and then the Judicial Council at its May 2022 business meeting. This concludes my presentation, and we are happy to take any questions you may have.
Joe, thanks so much. So this is a rather standard issue, but important to consider. Any questions for Joe or issues to discuss? So Joe, essentially this continues business as we have been doing through fiscal year, I guess it ending June 2024, correct?
That's correct, Judge.
Okay. I paused, I've waited, I hear no questions. I'd invite a motion.
This is Judge Ryan, move approval.
Yamasaki seconds.
All right, it's been moved and approved that the recommendation set forth considering the minimum operating and emergency fund reserve policy be approved. My practice is, considering this is a telephonic meeting, to invite opposition. So if there's any opposition to that, I'd request that at this time. Any opposition to the motion? And hearing no opposition after waiting an appropriate time, I'm going to deem that motion unanimously approved. Joe, thank you so much for your presentation today. It was informative yet efficient, which is what we truly appreciate. Thank you. Moving now to item number two, the trial court trust funds held on behalf of funds. We've heard from Cottrell quite often about this, and this is a request to consider to revise the funds held on behalf of policy, requiring courts to report to TICBAC each quarter within the last 90 days, just to create efficiencies. And Cottrell, I saw you on there. I'm going to turn to you and ask you to present. This starts at page 18 of your materials, folks.
Judge Conklin, this is Judge Sachs. I just entered up my having technical problems.
Great, Judge Sachs. So we'll show that you did not get a chance to vote on our most immediately last motion, right?
I heard it, and I did not voice any objection.
Okay, so good. We'll show you as a voter then. I appreciate that clarification. So we'll show Judge Sachs as one of the individuals that voted to approve the last motion. And now, Cottrell.
Oh, sorry. It's Brandy. I'm going to interrupt as well. Ms. Fleming and Judge Larsh have joined us as well, Judge.
All right. And so I feel myself moving a little fast. And I'm sorry, but both for Rebecca, Ms. Fleming, and Judge Larsh, did each of you have the opportunity to consider an opposition to the last motion?
Yes. This is Judge Larsh. I did consider the last motion, and I would have supported it, and there was no objection.
All right, thanks. Rebecca, same with you?
Same with me. Thank you.
Great. Okay, so I'm just to catch us up, I'm still showing that Judge Siebert is not with us, that Ms. Bartleson will not be with us today,
right,
that Mr. Harrigan has not joined us yet, and that Chris Rule has not joined us yet.
Correct.
And I don't hear any voices saying I'm wrong, so I think we can now get to Cottrell. Cottrell?
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Item two of today's agenda is a consideration to revise The current funds held on behalf policy that requires courts to, on completion of an approved project or planned expenditure, report to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee or TICBEC within 90 days on the project or planned expenditure and how those funds were expended. So just for a little quick background, the current TICBEC recommended process criteria and required information for trial courts to request an allocation reduction related to the 3% fund balance cap allows funds to be retained in the trial court trust fund as restricted fund balance for the benefit of those courts. Included is the requirement that courts report to TICBEC within 90 days of a completed project or planned expenditure and how those funds were expended. Now, budget services staff currently surveys courts to determine if a project has been completed in order to comply with the current 90-day reporting requirement and to report to the TICBEC quarterly. The process requires budget services staff to survey courts multiple times in a fiscal year based on the expenditure plan indicating a project or expenditure would be completed in that fiscal year. However, as you guys know, projects often experience delays and setbacks. Quarterly surveys often result in repeated requests with similar responses from courts. Revising the current requirement for courts to report within 90 days of a project completion to an annual report would result in a more streamlined process and would eliminate recurring court surveys, would reduce court and counsel staff workload, and would also better align with the fiscal year expenditure plan included in the funds held on behalf application. The current level of transparency and accountability of the funds held on behalf process would not be affected or impacted by this revision. The recommendations for consideration are as follows. We were asking that we revise the current funds held on behalf policy, requiring that courts report to TICBEC within 90 days of the completion of a project or planned expenditure regarding how those funds were expended from a quarterly to an annual reporting of all projects or planned expenditures completed in a fiscal year, and we would make the necessary language corrections to the current policy as appropriate. And that concludes my presentation regarding the funds held on behalf process or the revision, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
So, Cottrell, could I just, oh, I'm sorry, David, I saw your hand up first. Go ahead.
No, please, I defer to you. I'll follow you.
So I just, this closes the loop, right? So this is at the end of the project when funds held on behalf of the project is now closed. And we're quite simply, we're saying instead of reporting that within 90 days, we're gonna give a little bit of leeway here and say you report it at the end of the fiscal year, correct?
Correct.
So what about the beginning of the loop where, and I'm trying to think back now as to, for those courts that currently have funds held on behalf of, how long do they have to update their funds held on behalf of?
Well, so they're not updating or amending their current requests. Current process requires courts to report to Judicial Council every 90 days based on within 90 days of a project completion. We survey courts quite often based on those expenditure plans that have been approved by FPS and council to avoid constantly going back to the courts. Because we're not aware of all of the different changes that may, of course, occur due to COVID or other types of setbacks. We're trying to make it more convenient and more streamlined for the courts by saying instead of reaching out every 90 days based on your current expenditure plan, we're going to do it at the year-end process so that we can get all of the pertinent information and then report to TICBEC once we have everything at the year-end instead of every 90 days or quarterly in the current process.
Okay, so likewise, at the end of that year, if they still haven't completed their project, they'll report that.
Exactly.
Okay, David?
Yeah, so I kind of had a similar question to one that you just raised, Judge Conklin. I'm familiar with this program because I was involved with its beginnings, and it's certainly been very helpful for courts who've been trying to save resources for pretty significant projects, and with the cap, it was very challenging to do so. And I was wondering if there could be a modification to the recommendation, and here's the reason. Right now, as the policy is crafted, there is no timeline by when the funds have to be expended. Is that correct, Mr. Wood?
Correct. So long as the courts submit an amended request extending their current expenditure plan.
Okay. And so one of the things that, and I'm certainly mindful that the demands that are placed on JCC staff are constantly either growing or demanding, but I also am not necessarily eager for courts to take on additional responsibilities as well. But I think it would be a good consideration, let's just say, for perhaps courts to just report every year the status of that fund balance that are held in the trial court trust fund, funds held on behalf of, just as they have to report every year the status of the fund balance that they have within the 3% cap that everybody is striving to achieve. And the reason why I bring this up is it could be 10 years, quite honestly, that funds could be accumulating in the account, which in some instances it may be necessary because some of the projects are pretty significant. But it also seems perhaps prudent for courts to just simply report. You know, our goal is the same. The basis for setting the money aside is for, let's say, buying furniture for a new facility or something to that effect. But it also makes sure that there is a track record, if you will, documentation that just shows that a certain amount of money is being earmarked for a specific purpose from year to year. And I suspect that the fund balance of the funds held on behalf of, although it's not a specific line item, it could accumulate to a pretty significant amount. And I think if courts reported its intended purpose, that the purpose continues to remain in place, it just is a kind of a belt and suspenders to make sure that there's information that is connected to the funds that are held for this purpose.
If I may, just to confirm, so you're asking to amend the existing policy to also include that courts report on the status of their funds held on behalf requests?
Once a year.
Once a year, okay.
Yeah.
So what would be the difference? And I don't disagree with that, but I'm just asking Cottrell for clarification. So just court A in fiscal year one has funds held on behalf of for a project. At the end of that fiscal year, they still have those funds held in that account, held on behalf of. The funds don't increase. I mean, they just continue to sit on those funds for the project. So an amended request is filed if they want to decrease the funds held on behalf of, or if they need more money.
But or I guess if they want to change the project as well. So
it's they want correct. To change. But I guess what David's getting at is, if there's no amended report filed, then we really don't keep track of where those funds are over the course of the years of the project.
Well, Budget Services staff tracks those pretty closely, so we're aware of the planned expenditure plans. We just don't report the status or the planned expenditure plan to TICBAC. Once it's been reviewed by FPS and the council, or FPS, the fiscal planning subcommittee, those applications include the current expenditure plan or the planned expenditure plan. So we track all of that data so that we know when to distribute those funds based on that expenditure plan. The only difference is we're not coming back to TICBAC, at least not at the moment, informing the committee of those planned expenditures.
So really wouldn't be any more work for you and your crew except to report. You wouldn't have to go out and collect anything more because you're already collecting it. You just report Correct. To TICBAC what the annual status is.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it really is, I suspect that there could be an accumulation of significant funds for these very worthwhile projects. And it's just really an opportunity for courts to affirm perhaps that the project is still on and you know, striving to achieve a specific purpose as they do when they originally make the request to have the funds held there. So it's really just a track record.
So David, how about a recommendation three of the recommendation that Budget Services to update TICBAC annually on the status of funds held on behalf for those courts.
I couldn't have worded it better myself. Thank you, Judge.
Did you get that, Cottrell?
Once more, please. I'm writing a little slowly today.
And I'm thinking slowly, so let's try again. We would simply add number three to the recommendation that Budget Services is to update TICBAC annually on the status of the funds held on behalf.
Perfect. Thank you.
And I don't think there was a motion.
Not yet.
So now with that third recommendation, I'd invite a motion or discussion concerning that third recommendation along with the first two. Any discussion about now the three recommendations? And without a discussion, is there a motion to approve the three recommendations as stated?
Judge Conklin, this is David Yamasaki. I'd be happy to make a motion to approve those three recommendations.
Thank you. Is there a second? Well, I will.
This is I'll Judge second Gabe. It. I'm happy to second.
Okay, we'll let Judge Gabe do that. Moved and seconded that the two printed recommendations supplemented by the third oral recommendation be approved. Is there any opposition to those now three recommendations for item two? Waited, I paused, I've heard no opposition, so I will deem the motion of all three recommendations unanimously approved, still showing that Judge Siebert, Mr. Harrigan, and Mr. Rule are not attending. Cottrell, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we're now moving to item number three, and I saw there's Douglas Denton. Douglas, thank you. Item number three is the SB 170, one-time $30 million court interpreter employee incentive grant, and we've done a lot of work on this in the past. I'm sure Douglas will update us a little bit. This is at page 29 of your materials. And this is, in simply put, a consideration of an allocation methodology to distribute those funds just described to the trial courts that have requested them through the grant application process. Douglas?
Thank you, Judge Conklin, and good afternoon, TICBAC members. I hope you're all well. As Judge Conklin mentioned, there's a draft council report in your meeting materials on this item at page 29. Last September, SB 170 amended the 2021 Budget Act and provides $30 million in one-time general fund through the establishment of the Court Interpreter Employee Incentive Grant, also known as CIEIG. Last October, I presented an informational update and memorandum to TICBAC that summarized the budget language and proposed a process for soliciting and approving grant awards. And just to recap, this grant provides funding for 1 year of salary and training costs to establish new full-time court interpreter employee positions. $18 million of the $30 million is dedicated to what are called Category 1 grants. To be eligible for Category 1 grant funding, the court must demonstrate that for at least two consecutive years in the previous 4 years, it spent more than 20% of its interpreter funds on interpreter contractors or part-time interpreter employees who provided services in any of the languages listed in Civil Code Section 1632B. And those languages are Spanish, Chinese, so Mandarin or Cantonese, Tagalog, Vietnamese, or Korean. And then $12 million of the $30 million is dedicated to Category 2 grants. To be eligible for Category 2 grant funding, the court must demonstrate that at least 80% of its interpreter services in any of those same languages are already currently provided by court interpreter employees. So all courts actually qualify. It's just whether you're in one category or the other. For both categories, courts are able to request interpreter positions in other languages if they can demonstrate local need. Grant funding is intended to help courts reduce or at a minimum maintain the overall percentage spent on independent interpreter contractors or part-time interpreter employees to 20% or less. Courts are also expected to maintain grant-funded positions beyond the grant year as long-term positions, and there is no guarantee of future funding. Just to recap the steps we took to promote the grant opportunity to courts. On January 21st, we distributed grant guidelines, an application form, and historical court interpreter expenditure data to all 58 courts. On February 3rd, we conducted a webinar for the courts to review the grant application process and to answer questions. An FAQ document was also prepared and posted to the Judicial Resources Network. The deadline for applications was February 18th. And it's in the report, but a total of 6 courts applied for Category 1 grants, and a total of 3 courts applied for Category 2 grants. For the $18 million available for Category 1, a total of $1.645 million was requested for 1 year of salary and training for 12 new positions, leaving approximately $16.355 million in remaining funding for Category 1 grants. For the $12 million available for Category 2, a total of $831,000 was requested for 1 year of salary and training for 6 new positions, leaving approximately $11.169 million in remaining funding for Category 2 grants. In total, the grants would support the creation of 18 new court interpreter employee positions, including 14 for Spanish and 1 each for Mixteco, American Sign Language, a certified deaf interpreter, and a Chinese, so Mandarin or Cantonese interpreter. If approved by TICBAC, Budget Committee, and then Council in May, grant funding for this cycle is anticipated to be distributed no later than June 2022. Council staff and Language Access Services will also assist courts with recruitment for new positions supported under the grants. The $30 million one-time grants awarded in this fiscal year will be available for courts for expenditure or encumbrance until June 30th, 2024. Because there is remaining grant funding, the draft council report also includes a recommendation that council staff initiate another grant application process for the CIEIG in the next fiscal year, 2022-2023, in order to distribute the remaining funding. And then just to close, there are 3 recommendations in the draft report. The first is to approve the proposed allocations for the grants for 21-22. The second is to direct Judicial Council Budget Services staff to distribute grant awards to courts no later than the June 2022 distribution. And the third is to direct Budget Services and Language Access Services staff to initiate a future grant application cycle for 2022-23. And with that, Judge Conklin, I'll turn it back to you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you so much, Douglas. Any questions? So, and I want to cut it off, but I want to make sure I understand something correctly, and I'm stating this correctly. Court interpreters are extremely important and valuable to all of us. And these funds are likewise very much appreciated and needed. I don't want anybody to misinterpret what appears to be the limited interest in the funds to a lack of interest in the funds, in the sense that there are some very tight restrictions about how these funds can be used, including obligating, as you said, beyond 2 years to make these permanent employees, which is difficult for courts to project out. So Douglas, do you see any other reason why, and I don't want to put you in a difficult position, John Wardlaw is with us too, but I don't want anybody to look at this and say, boy, the courts asked for this money and they really didn't need it. We need it. It's just we can only spend this within the limitations that it's offered. Is that accurate?
Yes, I would say that was the biggest hesitation for courts, was the conditions that are connected to the grants. And we did hear from some courts, and I have to say all courts, I think, really did look at this seriously. For some courts, it didn't make sense to, for example, hire a full-time Chinese interpreter if they didn't think that they would have enough work for that. And so each court had a slightly different situation. And then something which could be a factor, but we'll find out, is we've found with grant programs in the past that sometimes it takes a while for people to really understand it and then decide if it can work for them. So I think this process, we may see additional interest from courts once they evaluate the program further.
Great. Douglas, thank you. And John, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that or if anybody had any other comments or questions.
Thank you, Judge. And I do think the legislature probably will have an interest in how the funds go out and how they're utilized. It's surprising if they don't take interest there. That said, as Douglas has pointed out, I think we have a pretty good response for where we're at right now, and we'll be accountable for allocation out and proper use of those funds.
Great. I appreciate that comment as well, John. Thanks. Anybody have any comments or questions? Hearing none, then I'd invite a motion. So this is at page 29 and 30 of your materials for the three recommendations as proposed.
Fleming would move to approve as stated, all three recommendations.
Thank you. And a second?
This is Judge Kelly. I'll second that motion.
All right. Moved and seconded that the three recommendations as stated at page 29 and 30 of your materials be approved. And again, is there any further discussion and any opposition to the three recommendations? I hear no opposition. So item number three, those three recommendations that set forth at page 29 and 30, I'll deem approved unanimously, save for the three members who aren't present. Douglas, thank you very much, as always, for your efficiency and information. It's much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you.
And likewise, turning to another familiar face, Anna Maves is with us for item number four, which is AB 1058 allocations and consideration of the 2022-2023 allocations for Child Support Commissioner and Family Law Facilitator Programs. Anna?
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Thank you, members of the committee. Yes, this item is on for approval for funding for next fiscal year for our Child Support Commissioner and Family Law Facilitator Program. And the proposed funding allocation is based on an approved workload-based methodology for the Child Support Commissioner side of the program and a population-based funding methodology based approved by the Council for our Family Law Facilitator side of the program. It also includes the allocation of what we call the federal drawdown funds. Those are the funds where if the court is willing to invest in the program with trial court dollars, they can receive some two-thirds matching funds from the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement. So based on questionnaires that were distributed to the court and based on the approved methodology by the council, allocation for those funds are also included in the exhibits. So Exhibit A is for the proposed commissioner allocations, and Exhibit B is for the proposed facilitator allocations.
All right. So this is a pretty routine action for us, equally important, but something I think that most of us are familiar with. The recommendations are set forth at page 35 of your materials, and as Anna just said, the number one is to approve the Child Support Commissioner allocation side of the program. And number two is to approve the Family Law Facilitator allocation side of the program. Those are set forth in the attachments. Any questions or comments for Anna or for the good of the committee? I don't hear any. Is there a motion to approve the recommendations as set forth at page 35?
Judge Thompson will move to approve.
Thank you. Second?
Finke will second.
All right, I heard Chad Finke second that. So it's been moved and approved that the recommendations at page 35, recommendations one and two, be approved. Do I hear any opposition to that motion or any requests for further discussion? Hearing no requests and hearing no opposition, after inviting opposition, I'll deem those two recommendations unanimously approved.
Thank you very much.
So John's with us. We're moving way ahead of schedule. And John, not that you need to, but is there anything you want to update us with or advise us of at this time?
Well, thank you, Judge Conklin and members. Briefly, I'll give you a quick update on the conversations we're having with the legislature relative to the budget as proposed by the governor. Just as a recap, the governor proposed a significant budget, ongoing budget for the judiciary. Key points there, there's $100 million for equity funding. That's intended for those lowest funded courts to be brought up. There is a inflationary adjustment to the tune of $84.2 million based on the CPI, which is ongoing. And then there's additional funding for 23 new judgeships, of which it's about $40 million. There's and then obviously on the cap outlay and the construction side, there's funding. So a big budget, historic budget. We entered into discussions with the legislature in a pre-hearing and a joint pre-hearing between the Assembly and Senate. Then went into a February Senate hearing. That went very smoothly. We then most recently attended a Assembly Sub 5 hearing. That occurred Monday, March 7th. And in that hearing, there was a discussion mainly around the $100 million. There was questions concerning what accountability measures, basically what is it that the people of California can expect as a result of an infusion of $100 million ongoing. We have had numerous conversations within the court family about ongoing funds and an expectation that there be some accountability associated with it. I've had no pushback from the courts. I testified to the legislature that that $100 million is specific as the council, as our branch family originally intended back last July when we put forward a proposal. You'll recall we asked for $160 million tied to bringing the lowest funded courts up. Because we have a workload formula that, as you all know, the formula is, as it's currently wired, the first 50% of the funds would go to lower funded courts. The remaining 50% goes to all courts. I have clarified in both hearings that the intent of these dollars, this $100 million, as the council has approved, would go to the lowest funded courts to bring the branch family up. And so we have provided that clarification. I fully expect that there will be provisional language or something that's coming forward that will likely ask for some level of reporting on those dollars and more broadly on a court by court basis. They're very interested in hours that courts are open, vacancy rates. You know, I would expect that information about backlogs and, you know, that's the kind of information that the legislature is interested in. And so I'll be surprised if there's not something that goes along with that permanent funding should the legislature ultimately adopt that proposal that will have us doing some level of reporting. So that's that. The next piece I wanted to give you a quick heads up on is there is a parallel conversation going on broadly. Well, a member of the legislature asked for a conversation with us about specifically Santa Clara and some debt obligation that that court has. There are other courts that have debt obligations as well. Santa Clara is by far the biggest debt obligation, and to the tune of about $94 million. That side conversation is, you know, I was very clear that our branch supports the governor's budget as proposed. We have that agreement with the administration. But should there be additional dollars above and beyond that the legislature wants to consider, because this is a there are a lot of one-time funds out there, should there be additional availability, we'd be supportive of a broad package that would address courts that have debt obligation on cap outlay projects. Should there be availability of funding, we would certainly appreciate that on top of what's been proposed by the governor. And so for your awareness, that conversation is going on. We'll see if there's additional requests being made by members of the legislature or others as we head toward the governor's April 1 update. Then he has the May revision, which is statutorily required by May 14th, that provides the legislature with an update on the revenue projections for the next year. So those are the two points in time where we may see additional things coming into the budget. I'll also remind you that that revenue projection, you'll see that the legislature is not taking very much in the way of actual actions on our items. They are having the conversations and kind of lining up. And the reason they're not taking actions is because they get their final view of what revenues are available for next year. That will be with the governor's May revision, May 14th release to the legislature. And then shortly thereafter, you'll see a legislature taking a lot more actions based on just how much money is available next year. So that's that. I'm happy to answer any questions for you should members have questions.
Great, John. Thank you very much. Any questions for John now that we have him? Okay. Doesn't look like any. John, thanks so much for that update. It's much appreciated.
Thank you, Judge.
All right. Anybody else have anything for the good of the order? Our next meeting is April 21st. I'd anticipate that continues to be via Zoom. And I'm open if any of you want to get in touch with me about your thoughts about, I mean, we will eventually go back to personal meetings as well, sprinkled throughout the year. I think there's a lot of efficiencies that we gain from Zoom, including the fact that none of us have had to travel more than about 5 minutes to get to this meeting. But on the other hand, being face-to-face at least once or twice a year, I think is also important for the good of the order. But I'm open to anything that you would like to share with me or to Rebecca, our vice chair, about your thoughts on this topic. I see Fran has joined us as well. Fran, thanks so much for coming in. Let's not forget about Brandy. She's out there somewhere and the important work that she does. There she is. So thanks so much to staff for getting us together today and keeping us efficient. And in interest of keeping us efficient, I don't hear anybody else willing or wanting to talk, so I will deem us adjourned. Thank you all, everybody. Be well and stay negative. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And go Dodgers.